Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Reed Forgrave, NBA writer for CBSSports.com, who joined us from Cleveland in the previous half hour. Still to come, Chris Mack from the Pirates Network will talk about the Major League Baseball draft. And again, Dunn from Shikellamy, drafted by the St. Louis Cardinals, 153rd overall. After spending 3 years at the University of Maryland, meaning he's a college player, he signs with St. Louis. In all likelihood, it's not guaranteed, but in all likelihood, they would send him here. Not to Johnson City, but they would probably send him here to stay college. It's if he signs. Now, this is where, obviously, he's hearing about how glorious, from a certain individual in the area, about how glorious the path to digital media can be. I'm telling you, take the baseball track and see how it goes. It's just, that's just me, Sean. Try the baseball thing. See how far it takes you.
You can always pan out and go to something else later.
Digital media will always be there. All right, so...
always evolving.
Is that this week's excuse?
it's an excuse. Okay.
It's always evolving. That was, you didn't sell anything, did you?
5 days into the month, and we're already throwing that out.
Just not good. All right. Before we get to Chris Mack, play-by-play call of the day. John Walton, is he ever having a great time with the Stanley Cup Finals?
Capitals showing the Ovechkin at center point formation here as Kuznetsov goes cross ice. Carlson scores from Ovechkin's office. Carlson makes it 4-0 Washington, and the Golden Knights are headed toward the brink late in the second period in game 4.
By the way, John Carlson has had an outstanding Stanley Cup run at defense for the Capitals. John Walton with the call on the Caps Radio Network. By the way, coming up tomorrow, R.J. Anderson, Major League Baseball writer, is going to join us from CBSSports.com. Also coming up tomorrow, Steve Bortstein from Fox Sports on the Belmont Stakes. Dick Girardi on the Belmont Stakes coming up on Friday. Yes, DJ is going to go. He did not go to the Kentucky Derby for the first time in 37 years. And, he's doing some side writing on it, Dick's, when it comes to that part, he does a couple specials here and there, he's not affiliated with anybody anymore, he sat it out. Well, he went to Pimlico, and as I said to him on Friday night, because we were together Friday night over at Beaver Stadium, I said to Dick, you really still haven't seen Justify in person yet, have you? It was so foggy, they couldn't see anything. He said, watching on TV like the rest of us. He says, they came past us, then they disappeared in the fog, and they didn't reappear again until they came down the stretch. I said, so you still haven't seen the horse run, have you? So Dick is going to go to Belmont to see if Justify can win the Triple Crown and be an undefeated Triple Crown winner like Seattle Slew. Dick will join us on the show on Friday. Looking forward to that. All right. So, by the way, it's Nick Dunn, 153rd overall pick by the St. Louis Cardinals. So, Nick, congratulations, sitting in Brewster. Which, by the way, Brewster is on the bay side of Cape Cod. Know it like the back of my hand. All right. Let's bring in Chris Mack now. Pirates Radio Network. Let's get into the Major League Baseball draft and some other items with him. Chris, always a pleasure. Welcome back, my friend.
I'd like to believe you guys have a few decent ideas up your sleeve, Steve. I mean, come on.
Just the mere fact that you'd even even consider that and give us a little slack. I appreciate the fact that you give us a little slack on that. That's tremendous. The Pirates ended up going to South Alabama to get their first pick, an outfielder. What have they told you about him?
Well, made projection wise, which, I mean, come on, he's a college kid coming from a smaller program, so it's hard to project, but he's got speed and power. So the initial projection is Travis Swaggerty is maybe a 2020 guy someday at his peak at the major league level. It's interesting that he was undrafted out of high school a few years ago, and that he comes from a less heralded program like South Alabama.
Right.
I think that probably speaks as much to what a guy can accomplish in a couple years in college at a higher level of baseball as opposed to some of these prep guys who you really don't have nearly as much to go on. So, but that's a good thing. The fact that he played with the U.S. Collegiate National Team this past year, acquitted himself pretty well. The fact that he's a lefty is nice. So, you know, lefty outfielder with a little bit of pop and a little bit of speed. Reminds me a little bit of the last time they took a top 10 first round pick. Austin Meadows was kind of projected the same way.
Yep.
A little bit of power, a little bit of speed. Now Meadows was a prep guy out of Georgia. So took him a little bit longer, obviously, to progress. The interesting thing about Swaggerty is he's coming out of college. So, you know, what kind of track do they put him on? That'll be the most interesting thing to watch and how he progresses the rest of the year. So, it's interesting to me that not just with Swaggerty, but with the guy they just took earlier this afternoon in the third round, the shortstop out of Vanderbilt, Connor Kizer.
Yeah, good player.
Position players, they're taking college guys. When it comes to pitchers, they're still going with prep guys, whether it's Hoagland out of Florida, who they got with the compensation pick, the competitive balance pick at 36, or Ashcraft, who they took, he's a Texas prep pitcher. 51 overall, or the guy they just took in the fourth round, another prep pitcher. So pitchers, they're looking for high school arms who they can look to sort of mold and shape into, you know, what they want them to be, as opposed to taking a guy from college who, you know, it's hard to tell the way some of these college pitchers, the way some of the college managers ride those guys. You don't know what kind of arm you're getting as far as what's left in the tank. So it kind of falls in line with what they've done the past few years, but I think overall what I've seen early on from this draft is they know, I would hope they know, that they have a little bit of a deficit as far as position players go in the upper echelons of the farm system. Pitchers, they're okay. You know, Mitch Keller's in Altoona. You know, Nick Kingham has debuted this year. Pitchers, they're probably a little bit more comfortable with what they have stockpiled. Position players are saying, no, we need to get guys who are a little bit closer to having an impact at the higher levels of the farm system, maybe even the major leagues.
Well, look, I mean, if you're taking a college player, well, I think the idea is you can actually get them through the system quicker. With a pitcher, I think they'd like to get their hands and mold them themselves. That's why they want to draft high school players. That's been my observation of watching here in State College when they were here, and then I'm now watching at West Virginia. They want to get like the Kevin Newmans of the world and move them through because they're more mature to do that with.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's exactly what I would expect them to do through the next few rounds. You know, once you get beyond like round 10 or so, it's just going to be the best available talent. But early on, it's interesting. You know, if Swaggerty starts in West Virginia this year, plays really well, maybe gets a taste at Altoona by the end of the year, that tells you some good things about his development. Again, he's from South Alabama. It's not like he's coming from an SEC school or, you know, a Pac-12 school where he's necessarily, you know, coming from a pedigree kind of program. So that'll be interesting, too, to see how much more development he needs.
Well, to be honest with you, P.J. Walters, who eventually got to the majors with the Cardinals and the Twins, started here in 2006 in State College, and he was a South Alabama guy. And you could see he had some good stuff, but you were absolutely right. Because what happened was, I'll never forget him being here. They used him as a starting pitcher. And then suddenly they ratcheted him back down to an inning here or there the last 6 weeks of the season. Because Mark Dijon, who was the manager here at the time, said, look, he said, they threw 172 innings down at South Alabama. He says, we can't.
Yeah.
Can't do that with them. So even though some starters, for example, on the college level, they're the Friday night starter, and they pitch once a week. I mean, so that's not bad. But they've got other places where they, you know, they use them all over the place, and
right.
and that's you're exactly right, Chris. That's the problem you run into. Which program do you get them from?
Exactly. And again, how much, especially when you talk about college pitchers, which the Pirates haven't taken yet in their first six picks or five picks, pardon me. College pitchers, it's so hard to gauge, you know, how much. I mean, you can look at the numbers, but
yeah.
Typically you're looking at far more extensive usage because college managers are just like, you know what, this is my guy, this is my horse, I'm going to ride him. I'm going to your point, he's going to be my Friday night starter. I might bring him in relief on Sunday, or if we got a midweek game, he's going to play left field 2 to 3 days a week, you know.
Right, yeah.
and when you get to late summer, I mean, that's, you know, these guys, along with making the adjustment from college ball to professional ball, they're just spent by the time they get to that point. So it's a good comparison you bring up, but we'll see how they – I mean, Swaggerty and then Kizer as well, being position players, that'll be interesting. You know, do they handle the workload well if they start at West Virginia, which I would presume, and then mm-hmm. once they handle that workload and get used to playing on an everyday basis – how do they progress? Do they, you know, if they're from a smaller school like Swaggerty is, do they, you know, just finish out the year at West Virginia, or do they get a little bump to Altoona by the end of the year, or Bradenton by the end of the year? And, you know, with a guy like Kizer, maybe because he comes from an SEC school, he comes from a good baseball school in Vanderbilt, maybe he progresses a little quicker, but still really early to tell.
You mentioned Austin Meadows in a previous answer. Obviously, he's had his opportunity with the big club to the point where they've been, you know, they kept him around. You know, you and I both know that they don't have a book on him yet. Right? Eventually, they will. What kind of staying power he has? But what's your initial impression of him?
The initial impression is that he's not doing this. Well, he has admitted early on that he's being what he calls selectively aggressive at the plate, which means he's usually counting on seeing a fastball early in the count because these guys are testing him, the major league pitchers that he hasn't seen yet. They want to see what the kid can do. And again, as you said, they don't have a book on. So they've got a little bit of minor league video, but that's not much to go on. So he's counting on getting good stuff to hit early in counts, and he's taking advantage of that. I think that is what you expect to see from a young guy with a ton of talent at the major league level. But what we're also seeing is that the swing and the approach at the plate are no different than they were at the minor league level. He's not, you know, knowing that he has a fastball coming, mm-hmm. he's not jumping out all over it and trying to muscle it out of the ballpark. He's staying within himself. Swing stays the same. The hands stay back. He stays tight to the ball. He stays on the ball. It's a very quiet swing. And to get that pop without the big, you know, haymaker, Aaron Judge type swinging for the fences kind of hack, that is what's impressive, I think, to a lot of people early on, is he's hitting for average, you know, just 400 for the first time Sunday afternoon, and he's also getting the power. So that, I think, is what's most impressive, is that he's not doing it with a young, overambitious swing or young, overambitious approach at the plate, staying within himself, showing a little bit of patience, albeit knowing that he's going to get good stuff to hit early in count. As you said, let's see what happens the second and third time he faces the Cubs and the Cardinals. And those guys have a chance to really go off of what they've seen from him at the major league level and start to kind of pitch him backwards, come early with the breaking and off-speed stuff, and then work back to the fastball late in the count and see how much that trips him up, if at all.
One area that he will not need to adjust, no matter what, I think, and I've always thought, to be honest with you, I've never been hot on him as a hitter at the minor league level. So, you know, I'm very direct about that. Everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
But the one area I've always thought that no matter what, he is a very good defensive outfielder. Very
good.
He knows how to track a ball. He's got a good arm. That part he's always going to have.
Well, and that's where I think you're seeing a lot of frustration from Pirates fans with spilling over onto Gregory Polanco, because Pirates fans have been frustrated with Gregory Polanco for a long time. They saw a little bit of a breakout early this season, and they saw the 8 home runs quick out of the gate with the home run power, but you're never going to get over the blips in the field. I mean, you saw it on day one, opening day in Detroit. He blows a play in right field, but then makes up for it later with the game-winning three-run homer in the 13th inning. And you go, all right, as long as Polanco's hitting, I can deal with the shortcomings in right field, because let's be honest, right field, where he plays half his games at PNC Park, is limited the amount of damage he can do with poor play out there. With Meadows, you can play him anywhere. You want to give Corey Dickerson a day off? You want to give Starling Marte a day off? Fine. Put Meadows out there. He can play center. He can play left, even at a big left field like PNC Park. Mm-hmm. To your point, he can track the ball, decent arm, and doesn't make himself a negative in the field. He's already, I think if you look at Fangraph's defensive metrics, he's already a better right fielder than Gregory Polanco, which perhaps has a low bar, a low threshold to cross. I mean, so for Pirates fans, this is what they're looking at. They're saying, okay, we're costing ourselves at-bats and plate appearances for Dickerson and Marte, even if Marte has cooled off in the last week. You expect him to continue to hit well, and certainly better than Polanco, but we're going out of our way to get Polanco at-bat. And yeah. I understand the other side of the coin being Pirates management. They can send Polanco down to Indy if they want. Great. He can go mash AAA pitching for a couple of weeks and feel better about himself. It's not going to help his approach at the plate at the major league level. And for that matter, sitting him on the bench probably doesn't help his approach either. So if Meadows continues to produce and Polanco continues to struggle, Meadows will force their hand. And, you know, the trade deadline is only a month and a half away now, 7 weeks away now. So we'll see. I mean, depending on where this team is in the next 6 or 7 weeks, could affect what they do. And we may not have a four outfielder situation beyond July 31st.
One final question, Chris, and I'll let you go. Thanks a lot for the time. Appreciate it very much. And that deals with the attendance. I know in terms of baseball weather in April was brutal. No question about it. Mm-hmm. May's been fine. I also know school is just getting out. Pirate attendance usually kicks up after school gets out. But has it been particularly disheartening to see so many empty seats in there on a night-in and night-out basis, and then they go on the road and it's filled up everywhere else?
Well, and not just empty seats, Steve, but here's the thing. You had the Cardinals and Cubs come in over Memorial Day weekend, and there were as many Cardinal fans in PNC Park as Pirate fans, and there were more Cub fans than Pirate fans. I mean, when Rizzo hits that home run on Monday afternoon, it sounded like Wrigley, which is the really disheartening part, where you've got two good teams coming in, and those, you know, weekends, holiday weekends against the Cardinals and the Cubs the last few years, those were guaranteed sellouts or close to sellouts, because you'd have their fans on top of Pirate fans showing up. There are still a lot of Pirate fans that are frustrated, and I get it. I do. I get the frustration over seeing faces of the franchise like McCutchen and Cole traded. I also would hate to think that if I were a Pirates fan and I live and die with this team and I'm watching everything they do, and that's why I'm so upset at the trades of McCutchen and Cole, that there's a chance I might miss something special this year. Now, that's not to say this team's going to challenge for a playoff spot. They might not. They might finish third or fourth in the NL Central and be out of it, you know, by the first or second week of September. But, you know, when you have moments like a Corey Dickerson walk-off or Joe Musgrove going into second to break up the double play on Baez, and those are cool moments that I think, yeah, you can watch it on TV. And I understand, to your point, the school's still in session for most people. It'll be, you know, most kids will be breaking out in the next week or so here if they haven't already.
Right, and I'm just trying to be fair about their situation. That's why I'm talking, you know, because I know what tradition says here. So it's not trying to be, hey, let's be negative. Let's be at least fair and say, hey, over the years, that's been a trend.
It has been. So let's see, you know, the Dodgers in town this week. We'll see if there's any impact there. When the Diamondbacks are in next, I think the week after next, you know, let's see what happens there as summer ticks up. If this team remains within shouting distance of the top of the division, which they've got some work to do after this recent 5-12 skid that they've gone through, let's see what happens there. The numbers aren't going to be as good as they were the last few years. It's just, I think, fact. There are a certain number of people that are going to stay away from the ballpark by means of voicing their displeasure with off-season moves. And if that's what they want to do, hey, that's, you know, it's their dollar to spend. I'm not going to tell them how to do it. But there are going to be, you know, there are going to be things that they may end up, if this team stays in it, they may end up missing that perhaps they'll wish they had been at the ballpark for. But we'll see how it goes. I certainly think we're probably looking attendance-wise. I mean, only the Marlins in the National League are drawing fewer right now. Right. So we're probably looking at the lowest attendance year. My guess would be, if not since 2010, then possibly it could possibly be since the park opened in 2001. We'll see. Again, if they get back into the division race, and they're in it, you know, until September, they're going to draw a lot more people to the ballpark in July.
No question. Chris, thanks so much. Appreciate the time on a wide range of topics, as always, my friend.
Hey, thanks so much, Steve. We'll talk to you guys soon.
That's Chris Mack from the Pirates Radio Network. We'll come back with more in a moment. Congratulations, by the way. I'm sure the Dunn family is jumping for joy today. Nick Dunn, 153rd overall pick in the Major League Baseball draft. That's impressive. And you know what? My gut tells you that you will not have a short trip to see his professional debut. Just my gut feeling, because it was the St. Louis Cardinals that picked him. Now, where do they have an affiliate? On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. Nick Dunn, Shikellamy's own out of the University of Maryland, 153rd player picked in the Major League Baseball draft. Happened within the hour. He's currently playing for the Brewster Whitecaps in the Cape Cod League. But if he decides he wants to sign his contract with the Cardinals, I'm 80% sure where they're going to send him. And 80% sure of where you're going to send him would be here. This happens to be a Cardinal affiliate within 3 miles of the Sunbury Motor Studio. How about that?
Very nice. Overall, he was ranked 174, so being taken 153, not too shabby. Breakout 2018 and first team all Big Ten selection.
Oh, he's a heck of a hitter. I hope they send him here. I really do. I think that would be great for everybody. I mean, great for the people here, great for the people in the valley, because, I mean, it's so easy to come here and see him.
Yeah, Maryland had a little bit of a down year this year, but Dunn led the team in nearly every offensive stat, including batting average, slugging percentage, on-base percentage, and home runs, to name a few.
Well, I'll drive him here myself. No. Good enough for me. I know how to get from Brewster to here. No issue on my end. All right, but congratulations to him, and I hope it works out and he does end up here. That'd be great. Looking forward to it very much. Beyond the Major League Baseball draft, of course, Dwight Clark passing away. We talked about the signature plays earlier in the history of the game. And those signature plays, Bart Starr's quarterback sneak, Packers win NFL championship, propel them to the second Super Bowl. Immaculate reception by Franco Harris. Steelers incredibly win a playoff game that they had fallen behind in. And now, they do lose to Miami the next week. Of course, Miami was undefeated that season. But then, that really is the play that you feel like propelled them to winning 4 Super Bowls in 6 years. And Dwight Clark, his catch. The 49ers had a remarkable year. They got to that point. But Danny White had just driven the Cowboys down the field to take the lead. in the Montana, in the usual Montana, very calm, cool, collected style, dink and dunk down the field using running back Ricky Patton and so forth, got himself in position, and then when he needed a play and he rolled right and Ed Too Tall Jones is right there in his face. He found Dwight Clark in the back of the end zone, and they won it. And that sent them to Super Bowl 16, where they then beat Cincinnati 20-14. Allen and Machy's overtime touchdown, which won it for the Colts over the Giants in 58, that propelled the NFL as a league to a national level in terms of national recognition, national television, national ratings, and so forth. And then you get to a guy like Starr and what he did, driving the Packers down the field late in the game, getting it done, scoring on the quarterback sneak. It's 15 below zero. The wind chill's 46 below zero, some number like that. And it's iconic. What Franco did was iconic. And what Dwight Clark did was iconic. They're all common threads as some of the greatest moments, greatest game in the history of the game. I've got to make one quick comment on, did you see the Yankee doubleheader yesterday with Detroit at all? Just the stats?
I did not.
Okay. Aaron Judge went to the plate. Look, and he's had a fabulous year. He went to the plate 9 times in the doubleheader. He struck out 8. He struck out 8 times in one day. Do you realize during it's a different era, the whole thing, I got it. During Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak, he struck out 5 times.
Boomtown Rats, I Don't Like Mondays. We'll dedicate that song to Aaron.
In the 56-game hitting streak, okay, which is 2 months, Joe DiMaggio struck out 5 times. Aaron Judge struck out 8 times yesterday. We haven't heard about that many strikeouts since the digital media sales meeting.
Oh. Dwindling? Didn't know it was going in that direction.
I asked, they said no. I asked again. Okay, Aaron Judge, nice day. How about that? And Judge has had a great year.
Can you imagine if Stanton didn't hit a home run yesterday? I think the Aaron stat would probably be a little more, shall we say, glorified.
It was interesting. Now, I'm watching last night's Giants-Diamondbacks game. Now, the only inning I saw was the 4th inning. I mean, that's what happens with 10 o'clock games during the middle of the week, you know. I'd say I'd have to get my beauty sleep, but everyone knows you could sleep for 5 months, it wouldn't make a difference.
We're in radio. That's why we're in radio.
On radio, I'm very sexy.
Yes.
In person, egad. You can go back to the radio now.
That's what I say when I meet people. It's like, ah, good, they haven't run out of the room yet.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I'm watching the game last night. Now, the Giants are coming off a series against the Phillies where they only gave up 1 run, so their pitching obviously was outstanding. All right. But in the top of the 4th inning, Arizona scored a pair of runs, and the starter for the Giants, it escapes me now, who threw a lot of pitches. So the Giants get to the bottom of the 4th inning, and Andrew McCutchen leads off and hits a home run. Now, it's his first home run in 5 weeks, by the way. But Andrew McCutchen leads off with a home run. Brandon Crawford follows that up with a home run. So back-to-back home runs, they tie the game at 2. After Evan Longoria makes an out, now they get a little rally going. They get first and second. They've got 1 out, and the pitcher spots do up. This is where I give Bruce Bochy a lot of credit. How many times have you heard Jack and me or Dick and me talk about the 3 times you can win a game, and sometimes one's in the first half, where you just put the game away. I mean, you can win games in the first half. You can put games away in the first half. Last night, Bruce Bochy, who's won 3 World Series titles with the Giants in 10, 12, and 14. Pinch hits for his pitcher in the bottom of the fourth inning of the 2-2 game. And sends Allen Hansen to the plate. Now, Allen, actually, you know where Allen started his career? Here. He was at the State College Spikes. He sends Allen Hansen to the plate because he feels here's an opportunity to break the game open. And Hansen, now you have to have the payoff. Hansen doubles down the left field line. And two runs come in to score. 4-2. Now they keep the rally going to the point where Buster Posey comes to the plate. Now Buster Posey, I mean, have you ever really watched Buster Posey swing? He has a beautiful swing. Now he doesn't have the pronounced uppercut that you see today of everybody always trying to take every pitch and drive them out of the park. He just has a beautiful level or slight upper swing on that thing. And he doubles to the gap, which probably is out in most parks in the majors. If they're playing at Citizens Bank Park, the ball's out. But he hit into that deep part in right center field in San Francisco at AT&T Park, drives in two more runs. They put a 7 spot on the board in the inning to win the game. But Bruce Bochy pinch hit for his pitcher in the bottom of the fourth inning because he sensed he had a chance to put the game away. Now, to me, that's great managing. Now, look, if it didn't work out, it didn't work out. I loved it the second he did it. I looked around and said, you know what? He's not going to send his pitcher up there and like, hey, we're going to get an out here. As you know, most pitchers are 140 hitters, for goodness sakes. I mean, you know how I feel about the pitcher hitting. I find no excitement in it at all. It's like, great, let's get to the leadoff guy. Let's go. All right. You know, the place goes insane when the pitcher gets a hit. Why? Because it never happens. But he sent him up there to pinch hit. The guy, you know, now he made the payoff. He came through. But I loved it. I love the managing. I love the fact that I've got a chance to win the game here. And he went for it instead of like playing it conservative and holding back. You know, well, we've tied the game up. Let me see if I can get my starter to 6 innings. His starters have already been doing that for him, so he had more leeway in the bullpen because he didn't have to exhaust his bullpen. With all due respect, he didn't have to exhaust his bullpen in the Philly series. He only gave up the one run. The area had a home run. So he had a little more play with his bullpen, but I just really liked the strategy of it. I mean, that's a guy that's going for it. That's a guy that, you know, you sit back and you look at it and say, you know what? There's a guy that's won 3 championships, and guess what? Yeah, he's got the cachet in his back pocket to say, you know what? I can do something different, and people are going to agree with me because I've got the chops to back me up. Just found it to be fun and exciting to do that. By the way, did you see Oliver Luck left the NCAA to become the XFL commissioner? That's a huge blow for the NCAA.
That's a home run hire for the XFL. Wait, Vince McMahon, look at you.
But it's a blow to the NCAA.
Yeah. I mean,
many of us thought when he left West Virginia to go to the NCAA, he could be a stabilizing force in that organization. And I wonder if he just got frustrated with the whole thing and left. I mean, I really thought that he was on the verge of ascending to the top position. But they haven't been willing to change the top position. But he's going to the XFL. That's to be the commissioner. That's huge. A big day in Delaware next on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Well, New Jersey may have been the state to fight the fight and spend millions to win its Supreme Court case, but they are not the first state to benefit from it. It is Delaware. Delaware, which was one of the four grandfathered states to begin with, Nevada, Montana, Oregon, Delaware, we've talked about it many times. They've been offering parlay cards through a state lottery since 2009. And as time has gone, they actually built sports books within casinos because they were anticipating a victory someday that would allow them to do this. That's why they were ready to go. It's like the old days of having the cable-ready TV. Boom, you plug it in and go. They were ready to go. So three Delaware-based casinos, and it's not, you know, not being a big state, this helps you in some ways because they, instead of having a dozen or 20 of these or whatever, it's a smaller state, so they have three places. Dover Downs, Delaware Park, and Harrington Raceway are the three places where they offer this. And today they began single-game wagering at 1:30 this afternoon on Major League Baseball, the NBA, NFL, and the World Cup. Now, eventually they're going to put in the NHL, golf, and college football. Gamblers are allowed to bet on a team for up to $1,000. Once a bet on a side exceeds that guideline, a bettor has to wait until the amount is approved by the administrating company, which in this case is William Hill. And the risk manager job, they say, is a call on the bettor's previous history. They project that sports betting, by the way, the governor today is the one that made the first official bet at 1:30 this afternoon, Governor John Carney. Did so at Delaware Downs. He wagered $10 on the Phillies to beat the Chicago Cubs tonight. So they are projecting that they're going to get $23.1 million per year in the state of Delaware. And they could get $49.6 million, including online betting. And they say the state intends to offer internet and mobile products, but they first wanted to focus on the physical sportsbook product being launched. So they're doing that first, then online later. One gambler who did show up was Charles Burrell, 33, of Dover, Delaware. He was there 4 hours before the first bets could be placed to check out the scene. He said, quote, "It's a great thing for a lot of people." He then put $20 down on the Washington Nationals to beat the Tampa Bay Rays by at least two runs tonight, and $20 on the Cavaliers to be ahead at the half. See, you can do a lot of things. $20 on the Cavaliers to be ahead at the half of tomorrow night's NBA Finals. So a lot of people talk about football because of the parlay cards previously available in our state. But you have to wait so long. Baseball can really be profitable. Burrell was giddy just talking about the possibility of placing a legal bet in his town. "I did not think this day would come," he said. "It had so many hiccups, and it was dead, and then it came from out of nowhere." Now, if you're wondering about why they're first and New Jersey is not, well, New Jersey was just about ready to go, but they actually had to go back. Um, and had to pass another bill to do this. And supposedly the final vote is Thursday. And they say that it's identical sports bills going through, expected to be through the legislature on Thursday. Governor Phil Murphy is then likely to sign the bill a day or two later. A day or two later. There are people that want him to sit outside the chamber and then, and before the ink is dry, sign it. They say the second that the governor signs it, they expect Monmouth Park to be open immediately because they are, again, like the three places in Delaware, they're set to do this. Now, the question is, when will Pennsylvania do this? Supposedly, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Mississippi are the three other states that are in really a good position to get going quickly. You would think statewide. You know, and again, I'm a person that cares zero about this. Zero. I rarely, if ever, know a line in a game. Rarely, if ever. Every once in a while, somebody will come by and say, hey, you hear that you hear we're six-point favorites? I'm like, okay, great, fine. Right? Or, you know, basketball, you know, I heard it's Penn State plus 7 tonight. I'm like, okay, great, whatever. I mean, it'll be passed on to me, but I don't seek it out. I don't care about it. But that's me. There are some of you out there that care about it. That's why we talk about it. Now, what they did in New Jersey is they made a change. Not to license mobile sports betting for 30 days after sports betting begins at casinos and racetracks. So they're going to put that part off for a month. As for the integrity fee, they, you know, that isn't in there right now either. So there's no integrity fee in New Jersey. Once again, why are the pro sports leagues going to Congress? Because they know in the states they are not going to win. The states are going to look at them and go, for what? Remember, it goes back to what I talked about earlier, Sean. You know, the leagues are acting like this is an incredible boom for them, and in some ways it is. But when it comes to fees from the state, they have no leverage.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.